Oh man.
Are we doing this to a click?
Yeah, definitely. All your answers have to be wrapped.
210 BPM.
So back in the days when we made Crown Lands, I went up to Cody with my hands open wide.
Wow, yeah. That does not rhyme at all.
Shut up. Shut up.
Oh, man.
This internal rhyme, hands and lands.
Oh, yes. See, look at that. Rhyme. I did not realize how much of a Kendrick you were.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
What is up, everybody? It's Max here with what I guess is going to be the very first full episode of the Kozen podcast, or just Kozen cast. I guess we'll see how the name develops over time. I'm glad you're here, though, and I'm really stoked to get into this interview with Crownlands. They are an amazing, amazing rock band from Oshawa, Ontario. Known them for a number of years, and they're really cool guys. I figured it was due time to, you know, after witnessing kind of this climb that they've been on that's been really inspiring to watch, I figured, why not interview them? They're really interesting, and they've got a story to tell, so why not tell it? Before we get started, I just wanted to make a couple kind of preliminary verbal footnotes to the interview, having listened back to it. One, the bulk of our conversation revolves around the themes of the song Mountain, and in the interview you'll hear Kevin refer to it as a song that will soon have a music video. But since the time of recording, they've actually released that music video, and it's out, and it's super dope, so you should watch it. It's got some really powerful imagery and a really pointed message. Either before or after you listen to this podcast, you should check out that music video, because I think it'll enrich your experience of this conversation. Secondly, I try to ask open-ended questions, just so that people can express themselves freely. And this time around, I ended up asking some questions that made it sound like I didn't know some very basic historical facts. I promise I'm not that ignorant, and I just had a really terrible transition. I'm new at this interviewing thing, so I promise I'll work on my future questions to be more direct and not make me sound like a complete idiot. Thirdly, there are points in our discussion on the song Constant Motion where I actually forgot to mention how it reminded me thematically of another song, Lovers in a Dangerous Time by Bruce Cockburn. It just encapsulated a similar theme of adventure, fear and wonder, purpose, discovery, and the human condition. I let that comparison slip my mind, so I thought I'd throw it out in here. And that particular song has always struck me with its spiritual depth, and I felt like that was something that Crownlands also achieved with the opening track on their recent EP as well. So if you're a Bruce Cockburn fan, maybe you'll see the similarities. And if not, that's something else for you to look up. Anyways, I'm just going to let this interview run. It's pretty interesting. We cover a number of topics. And thank you for being listeners to this newly born podcast. I can't wait to throw more of these at you. Anyways, here we go.
First time I met you guys, you were Heavy Earth.
Oh man, yeah, that was
playing in what was that place called?
The Wasted Space.
Wasted Space. Yeah, that was the first time I heard you guys.
Wow.
Jonathan Sloan called me up and he's like, "Hey, come to this show," and then that was that.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you guys were looking very flower power.
Yeah.
Like those lava lamps and stuff. Yeah. Pretty great.
I remember that show. That was. That was in July, right? Like July.
Sometime in the summer, yeah.
Years ago.
Yeah.
2013, maybe?
Probably 14.
2014.
2014. Wow. Bro, that was 4 years ago.
Wow.
That is some craziness.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
That was the year that we met, I think.
Yeah. The same year we met, we'd only been friends for a few months at that point.
That's wild.
Yeah.
How'd you guys meet?
It was an audition for Heavy Earth.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, a buddy of mine was looking to become their guitar player.
Okay.
And I just got back from some travels, so I was just looking to hang out. And my buddy was, yeah, you know, this band's pretty good. They're big Rush fans. You should come out and meet them. And
right.
I was pretty stoked on the prospect of meeting a rhythm section that was, you know, into Rush. So
right.
Cody and I hit it off instantly.
Of course.
And I ended up getting the gig as a guitar player for Heavy Earth, but at that point I wasn't even a guitar player, really. I was playing bass and keyboards in projects.
Right.
And so it was just kind of an interesting undertaking to learn how to play a guitar solo convincingly.
Right.
And pretty much on the go.
Like, I wouldn't have guessed that you weren't really a guitar player, like, from that show. Like, I wouldn't have figured that.
Well, yeah, that was a few months into it of, like, just playing with the guys every day. Because,
you know, play every day.
We were younger. We didn't have jobs. It was great. We just would get together at Dylan's place. And,
and just rip, like, all day.
All day, yeah.
Until, like, dinner, like, 8, 9.
Wow.
Every day.
Yeah.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got tight pretty quick and got our chops together.
Yeah. And I think in the first 2 weeks, we actually wrote like
the whole EP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then after that, I took off for about a year with another band and toured across Canada.
Right. I remember you were doing that.
Yeah. And
who was that again?
I was with a band called The Scenic Sound.
Okay.
And they're not doing anything anymore, unfortunately. But
that's too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to do that, though.
Yeah, it was great. I got a lot of my chops up playing guitar for that and learned how to be a consummate professional musician and how to load in and load out quickly. And, you know, it's one thing to be playing these tiny little art cafes in Oshawa and having fun with your friends. And it's another thing where you have to be on the ball day after day.
Yeah.
And I kind of took all of that knowledge and brought it back, and I hit up Cody again. Right. And
we just jammed to see what was happening after all that time away.
Right.
And stuff worked out.
Yeah, we pretty much, I guess the two of us, we had been working on our own stuff whole time, and a lot of the material that we had amassed ended up being the first Crownlands EP.
Yeah. Right. And, well, when we started it, we were like, I wasn't even thinking about playing drums, actually.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I was just going to sing.
And wow.
Kevin was gonna play drums with his feet and play guitar.
Wow, that would be a very different two piece than what you guys have going on right now.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. It started out that way because I had seen Shaky Graves while I was on tour.
Okay,
he's like this fantastic kind of folk Americana musician, and
he
would he'd finger pick his hollow body guitar while doing like kick drum with his right foot and tambourine with his left.
Right,
I saw that and was like, yeah, I'm gonna do that.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm not a singer. So I was like, I need to play someone to sing these songs. And so Cody hopped in.
And I tried singing, like, this style I never really tried before. And I was just like, wow, I can really, like, project. Like, wow, I got, like, a cool voice. This is cool. And
yeah.
I just kind of went with it.
Yeah, because in Heavy Earth, you weren't even really singing, were you?
No, not really.
Right.
And that was the reason I left the band. Because the whole, like, every band practice by the end was resulting in a huge fight. Because I was like, Cody should be the lead singer. And
just a lot of tension between.
And then the other guy was, no, I have to be the lead singer, you know. And it was I left.
Right.
And luckily, but when I came back, Cody had, had the time to put into Crownlands.
Right.
Otherwise, who knows where both of us would be? You know, I'm sure we'd still be playing music, but.
Right.
Wouldn't be at the level we're at now, probably.
Right.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So you find someone that, it's like a soulmate, right? You find someone that you love and you know you're going to spend the rest of your life with doing your favorite thing. And you're like, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so easy, unfortunately, for so many bands just to kind of fall by the wayside. And that's why we're a duo, because it's pretty easy to keep two people together.
Right.
Yeah. It's easier to write. It's easier to, like, divide, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what you guys have is, I mean, for all the equipment it takes, it's very compact in terms of, like, personnel. You know what
thanks.
I mean?
Yeah. In terms of personnel it's
yes.
compact.
Gear,
yeah. No. Yeah, gear, like, it's ridiculous now.
Yeah, well, I figure you got, like, multiple amps and all the foot switches
starting,
and stuff you have
I
to
haven't
run.
Even dipped my toes into how much percussion stuff I want.
Right. Yeah, you are here rocking this, little three-piece kit.
Spartan, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Sweet. Is that yours, or is that
no,
the
it's
venue's?
No, it's
yeah,
the venue's.
I figured yours would be a little than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's bigger.
Yeah.
It's still just bigger. A three-piece kit.
Yeah. True.
I want to add the other two.
You get a lot out of the three-piece kit, though.
Like, thanks.
You're, when you guys played, what was it, downtown a while ago? I don't even remember anymore. Only time I saw you guys, I can't even remember what the name of the venue is.
Do you know when?
It was sometime at the end of the summer, I think. Well,
like
I could be
year?
Wrong. Yeah.
Hmm.
Mm.
Toronto.
Yeah.
Mm. Horseshoe Tavern?
No, it wasn't the Horseshoe.
Was it like an underground venue?
No. The venue is like you walk in like up a ramp almost kind of thing.
The Phoenix?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
cool.
was it. Yeah. I don't even know when that was. I saw
true.
You guys there.
That's
awesome.
August, then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that was a good time. That was with 94.9 Gen Next.
Yes. That was the one. That was
right
the one.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you did a drum solo.
Yes.
And it was it was impressive how much you were able to get out of that kit. Like, you just, it was craziness.
Thanks so
much.
The
whole set was craziness, to be honest.
Like, it's kind of what we want to do is make people impressed. Yeah, just like what you said, just that's kind of our mission statement is how much can you do with how little you have on stage kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, how much noise can two people make?
Right.
And
you guys certainly make a lot of noise.
Thanks, man.
Like, good noise.
Thank
good
you.
Noise, yeah. Sometimes it gets a little too fuzzy, you know what I mean?
That's good. It's like the raw, like,
yeah,
you know, not safe.
I think one of the things that I noticed about you guys is that there's a certain energy in your live show that mm-hmm. you don't necessarily see out of a lot of bands.
Thanks.
And, like, it's, I mean, I think that's refreshing. Is that intentional or is that just kind of, like, what happens
that's
when you're up there?
Really what happens. I don't even think about it or, like, know about it until, like, you know, I mean, obviously you feel it, but until people tell you, like, man, you got, like, this energy thing. It's like, yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's the energy you get from the audience and you kind of, it's a synergy.
Yeah, you get this kind of, we seem to be getting a lot of the same feedback night after night where it's, oh, yeah, you guys play with such conviction, you know, they can really tell that we believe in every note that we're playing.
Right.
And I think that's because, you know, I've done, like, session work and pickup stuff where I'm not playing my music. It's, you know,
right.
But how do you make it yours then, right? And that, you struggle with that long enough, and then you finally go and play in a project where it's 100%, like, your brainchild mm-hmm. with, you know, with somebody else, and you're like, oh, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Of course. Like, this is, like, as close to my soul as you're going to get. Yeah. And,
right.
Play it like it's the most important thing in your life.
Yeah, and it is. You know, it's the best feeling in the world when you get on stage and you plug in your amps and you know, you become the sound.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. It's, you know, when everything's hitting really good and you kind of close your eyes and get lost in the moment,
mm-hmm.
you get those goosebumps. And those are those magic moments that you try and get to every show.
Totally.
Yeah, sometimes you only get it like
once or twice. Sometimes you don't get it at all, you know? Like,
right.
But that's what you're striving for. It's just like.
Exactly.
Like that certain kind of floating feeling you get.
Yeah.
That, you know,
it's like almost transcendent.
Yeah.
Like, it is.
You're almost like out of your normal experience,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And you just get into like a certain kind of mindset where you just like feel like, okay, I want to like put on the best show for everyone here. You know,
right.
It can be as simple as that too, and it usually is.
Legit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some of the cuts on your most recent EP, Rise Over Run.
Okay.
Especially because, like, I appreciate... Who writes the lyrics? That's one question I want to throw out. It's like a collaborative thing between of you?
Yeah, we both do.
Cool.
Yeah.
How do you find, like, that songwriting dynamic goes? Because I know writing lyrics between two people could be a challenge.
It's pretty
sometimes
good.
It can be.
Yeah, yeah, it's sometimes definitely a challenge.
Like, no matter what, like, you know, one song's going to be more Cody and another song's going to be more me. It's just how it kind of works.
It's just easier to be, like, you know... Everything is 50-50 because all in all it is. Like, you know, we bring a part, we bring a line or, like, a whole poem to each other and we're like, hey, I like this, but not this. And then it's just editing. And then we kind of get to this conclusion where we're both kind of satisfied with what the message it conveys and the grammar and stuff. And we're like, you know what? Yeah, this is cool.
That's legit.
Yeah.
I think you guys, lyrically, you're pretty interesting in terms of... I mean, your writing style, it's not... You're not... bluntly stating exactly what you mean, so to speak. Like, there's definitely a lot of literary devices and poetry to it.
Thank you.
Which is cool. I think you give the listener room to interpret, for sure. But it seems to me like there's a lot going on underneath the surface in terms of, like, what you're talking about.
There totally is. That's always been, like, a thing that I've always wanted to do with our songs and stuff.
Right.
I really appreciate songwriting that leaves it open to interpretation.
Right.
And so... Yeah, that's definitely something we've wanted to put into our music.
Are you guys the types who, like, want to leave it open? Like, are you down to talk about what your intentions behind some of the songs are?
Totally.
I know for some people, like, they don't want to destroy the mystique of, like,
open.
Yeah? Okay, cool.
Every song is about sex.
Nice.
Rock and roll,
I kind of figured. Constant motion, right?
Quite the inverse. I don't think we ever want to write about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Just like
those just kind of us.
That, like, we avoid every time. Cause there's nothing worse than, like, a rock band. It's like, yeah, love gun.
Yeah,
nothing against Kiss or anything.
Right.
Yeah, we don't ever want to fall into those tropes.
Right. I mean, something tired is tired, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like,
and
it's
Rock has such a rich history of music like that we don't have to join those ranks.
Right, you don't have to necessarily add to it.
Yeah, so we want to do our own little thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's. I mentioned constant motion, but let's talk about that one.
Sure.
It seems like I could theorize about what I feel like is going on in that song.
Actually, but love
I would
love to hear
yours.
I mean, I haven't memorized the lyrics per se, but I was reading through them last night.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it felt like, actually, do you guys mind like if I put like 10 second clips of songs we mentioned in this?
I don't mind at all.
All right, cool. Absolutely. We'll run that for people to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, I think probably my favorite song, maybe first or second favorite song on the new EP for you guys. Was that a real Hammond in there?
It is.
Yes,
of course it is.
Yeah.
You guys recorded with Justin, I would imagine.
Yeah.
There's nothing fake about it, right?
No fake.
Here, I'll pull that up for you.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Look at you go.
Yeah, man.
What I found myself thinking when I was looking at the lyrics was that it feels like there's definitely something supernatural, kind of metaphysical about it.
Sure.
Like looking at pulling invisible threads and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then kind of the contradictory statements in the chorus about things not like the statements themselves and what they literally mean aren't necessarily what gets me, but the idea of like constant motion, constant static, constant like tension between like movement and non-movement and what that's all about.
Yeah. Nothing changes.
I find that very interesting. I find it very evocative. I couldn't necessarily put into words what it means, but it feels like it's grasping at something intangible in the world. And
that's
really
cool.
That's
100%, man.
Yeah,
Just gave me goosebumps. It's exciting
that
you didn't think about it, but you felt about it. And I think that's important for music. It's like you want to hit somebody's feelings before they start thinking about it.
Right.
You start intellectualizing music too much, then you just, I don't know, you lose something, right? It has to be a visceral experience.
Right.
But as far as the meaning of constant motion, I guess it's rooted in a lot of, like, Cody and my life experience of just, like, constantly chasing adventure.
Okay.
And, like, you know, ups and downs in relationships and friendships and everything like that and goals in your life, you know, like, and, you know, talks about, like, you know,
The idea of like the movement that kind of stirs your soul and like settles everything down. Because for me, like my whole life, I've just been drawn to the open road and like the call of adventure.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, walking into that sunset is almost like the album cover. That's kind of like that's the image we're trying to paint with that.
Yeah.
And the idea of like this ongoing story, because it starts out, you know, with the first word is and
yeah,
it's
like a ellipsis.
So it's like it comes in from something.
Yeah.
And similarly, I really love nature and stuff like that. So it pulls from many different inspirations.
Yeah, I think it's the closest. The second verse is like as close as we ever get to like outright talking about the act of lovemaking.
Right. The two lovers in the temple.
Yeah, and you know, and you feel like the warm pulsing sounds and this idea, I guess, of, you know, the temple is, I guess there's like two separate meanings of it. It's like one, like your body is a temple, and the idea of like sharing that with somebody.
Right.
And then of course the other thing, temple is, you know, like you had like your consciousness of like actually being able to relate with somebody on like a deeper level of being, you know?
Right.
And then the idea of like finding that power of now, and that's like a direct reference. I was listening.
Eckhart Tolle.
Yeah, I was reading a lot of Eckhart Tolle, and
okay.
He's like a fairly like modern Western philosopher who borrows a lot from like ancient Eastern philosophy, the idea of being in the moment and like, you know, preserving that. And I feel like that's, you know, very popular right now with you know, hippy dippy Instagram models and stuff.
But at the time, we definitely pulled from that too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's just, you know, that's I enjoy his writing, and that was kind of like a touch on that. And obviously, you know, then pulling on invisible threads, searching for something out there, something bigger than that.
Yeah, something bigger than yourself.
And
right.
That's what for us, it's music. For some people, it's religion. For some people, it's you know, so many things. Dance. Like, joining welding, a commune and farming for the rest of your life. Who knows, right? It's just, like, whatever it is that, like, makes you feel like you're part of something larger.
Yeah.
And finding those inner workings. And we always joked where, you know, we'd sing that and... And then I just, like, found it when I'm going to those huge, like, chords, right? Because it's just that feeling of, like, hitting that, like, musically, it's, like, for me, it's the most powerful chord progression where you're doing, like, a major one going into, like, a flat seven. And it's just cool because it's just, like, a mixolydian chord progression.
Right.
It's just, like, so classic rock. Uh-huh. And just, you know, you hit, like, a D going into, like, a suspended C, and you're, like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Cody's hitting the drum so hard. And it's just, that's what it feels like where... Coming back to feeling the music and becoming that sound.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Constant Motion is for us. It's like, oh, yeah, there it is.
There's
like
the stops and starts and all those.
Right. Yeah. Well, I definitely, like, from, like, the sonic texture of the song itself, it really... It evokes the outdoors. It evokes, like, just kind of bigness in general, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And so you guys did a really good job, like, of kind of harmonizing the lyrical and sonic content there.
Thank you.
Because you could have, I guess, kind of gotten that picture even if you didn't speak English. Like, you could listen to it and be like, well, this sounds really big and expansive, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really cool. I think that's a sign of, like, real good musicianship. Wow. So
Thank you so much.
That's,
yeah, man.
That's huge.
For sure.
Wow. Cool. It's one of my favorites. Like, it doesn't get same. It probably gets the worst response live I know. Like,
really?
It does.
Like, our music has, like, a certain kind of, like, energy, and then when we get to that part of the set, it's like a bit more sparkly, a bit more open, as you say.
Interesting.
And, you know, I'm going from playing a lot of like open tuned slide and sludgy fuzz
stuff,
and then we kind of pretty it up a bit and doesn't get the best response.
We bust out, like, a strat for that cleaner, more angular sound.
Maybe it's a slot on the set or something.
I don't know. It's never been, like, a huge live number for us. It's one of my favorites to play live because it's pretty challenging with, like, there's a lot of parts and a lot of dynamics.
You got, like, time changes and stuff.
Subtle time change.
There's, like, a bit of seven in the bridge, which is fun because it's Cody's favorite signature to play in.
Nice.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I guess we have to kind of go back and maybe rearrange it for live. But I still stand by the studio version. I still think, that's an accurate representation of what we do musically.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a phenomenal track. What do you guys normally open your set with? Like, what?
We opened it with Being Right for the longest time.
Okay.
We have this new song that we're working on, and we started opening the sets with that one.
Okay,
because it's the hardest song we've written.
Yeah,
it's got so many changes.
Very hard hitting. So it gets the energy kind of, like, set.
Right.
And if we nail that, the rest of the set is just stupid easy. It's just kind of funny.
Because vocally, it's the hardest song and the highest song that I sing. And so like when I hit that, if I hit it. The rest of the song, the rest of the set, I'm coasting.
That's
so
cool.
It's really nice.
Can you say the name of the new song? I didn't catch that earlier.
It's Hard Times.
Yeah, Hard Times. Yeah.
Sweet. I'm looking forward to hearing that on record someday.
We're going in the studio. I guess, when this gets released, we'll have gone into the studio.
Okay.
Legit. Now we're going in pretty
soon.
Legit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Yeah, man. So definitely, I feel like you guys had some really interesting things going on lyrically. I wish, honestly, if I could sit down and, like, talk to you about every single song you've written, I totally would.
We would love to sometime.
But, definitely for people's attention span, you know.
Yeah.
But I guess the other big thing to talk about would be, not the other big thing, but the one thing I feel like would be a really interesting conversation for you guys would be, like, the name of the band itself.
Yeah.
Crownlands and what that stands for.
Yeah.
And obviously, Cody, you could probably, like, weigh in a lot on that.
Totally.
Away,
not that either of you is, like, more invested in it.
No, no worries. No,
but, like,
all,
could you, I don't know. I remember, like, at one point, this made me sound like a stalker, but I remember one point there was, like, a little blurb about it on your website. And I feel like it's not, I don't know if I've seen that there necessarily.
True.
A little explanation about, like, where the name comes from.
I
want
to put it in there. I've designed the website, so I don't think I put it in there yet. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But we're definitely looking
somewhere online about what it was about.
Right. I think it was a common thread somewhere.
Gotcha.
And Kev threw it up.
Right. Can you, for the people listening, can you kind of run through, like, what the essence of, like, Crownlands means?
Yeah, totally. Well, first of all, I'm just going to, like, set it.
Go for it.
So I'm part Mi'kmaq.
Right.
Which is a native tribe from Nova Scotia.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, Crownland makes up most of Canada's geography.
Right.
And, you know, it's got so many meanings and so many uses, from, like, you know, clear cutting to, like, you know, you can just chill on Crownlands for a couple weeks.
Yeah, basically, yeah. it's land that you can camp on for free for up to 2 weeks, which a lot of people don't know about that. Yeah. I feel like that's
really,
like, a really positive element, and
it's probably, you know,
one of the only positive elements. Of Crownland. You know, otherwise, that's where all of the big game hunting is done.
Okay.
And Cody and I don't believe in, you know, in killing any living creature.
Right.
Know,
like,
yeah.
We don't need to get into that deep.
Yeah. Like,
But yeah, like, all the old growth forests in the country are on Crownland, and that's where all of, like,
and all, you know, the oil sands in Alberta and stuff are on Crownland too. So,
and yeah, so, and we're compromising our environment big time.
By short-sighted financial stuff.
Yeah, we're destroying our country just for a quick buck. Yeah.
Right.
And then the crown
part of that, what's the, that's got to do with the,
it's federally it's the regulated crown. Land. It's the crown. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is
goes back to the
owned
monarch
by the monarch.
And,
yeah.
Right.
And,
okay.
Britain.
And
yeah, and then native reserves are all on Crown land.
Gotcha.
And Cody is Mi'kmaq.
Right.
Which is, I guess, a native tribe out east.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, you know, on these reserves, many people don't have access to clean drinking water.
Right.
And, like, their living conditions are third world conditions. And just, you know, just a whole bunch of terrible things happen.
Mm-hmm.
The history of residential schools.
Yeah,
which,
brutal,
you know,
in
so
Canada.
So it goes real deep, and it goes real deep into, you know, Indigenous history. And we want to speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With this name, we kind of want to...
It's the idea of, like, reclaiming it,
reclaiming
for
the name
for
everybody and for Indigenous people in Canada to be, you know, to, how would you say?
Just encourage people to, like, rise up together and recognize that there is an issue every day that we like to ignore as a country.
Right.
The fact is that we haven't done right by these people that, you know, we're living
on
their land, you
place,
know?
Yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize that reconciliation still has a very, very long way to go.
Right.
And we're trying to do our part. You know, again, we're musicians. We're not politicians. We don't know everything.
Right.
We don't have the answers, but we want to recognize that there are questions that need to be asked.
Right.
We did a song on the last record called
Mountain. Yes,
and that speaks directly to
right. I would love to talk about that song too.
Yeah,
I feel like there's definitely
we've got a video for that coming out very soon.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
Very soon.
With
yeah.
that,
wow.
we want to include a call to action with that.
Okay,
idea of calling on the Minister of Indigenous Rights in the country to reinstate a director for the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women.
Yeah. Right.
Because I'm sure you saw in the news last year, the director stepped down very quietly, and still to this day, no one has been reinstated.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
yeah.
A huge campaign promise by the Trudeau government is just waving in
just
the wind
there.
Right now.
Yeah.
No one's doing anything about this really important issue right now.
Right.
And so alongside the video release, we're going to be working towards doing something about that as much as we can, you know, using our platform
to talk about
to talk about it.
For
You know, we're musicians. We have no money to be donating to this.
Right.
But we have our time
and
we have
our music.
Platform.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we felt like naming it Crownlands would be, you know, it's our responsibility as musicians to do, you know, whatever we think we can that's right in the world and that's, you know, for our country, for our people.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's why we're called Crownlands.
That's cool. It's I remember I told my girlfriend about it. I was like, yeah, you know, it's like... there's a bit of like a protest element to like how they've named their band. And she's like, that's badass.
Cool.
So punk rock.
No, it's cool. It's a
Thank
cool
you.
Thing.
Thank
do you find that people are responsive to that? Like, do you talk about it much or?
We talk about it a lot.
When we're prompted, obviously.
Yes,
we're not going to,
we're just going to go out and
we try not to be overly preachy with, our message or our music. Cause bands that do that rub me the wrong way.
Sure.
I won't name names, but Bono. And there's a certain limit to talking about social justice that a rock listener is going to take.
Yeah.
And so there's only so far you can go with stuff that you believe in before you realize, like, why am I here on this stage is to, like, play music.
Right.
Yeah.
But with that, you know,
you can throw in a message.
Yeah,
here
to throw in something
there
that you do believe in, right?
Yeah. Right.
And that's kind of what we try and do is strike that balance of staying true to who we are and making sure that, you know.
Exactly. Like, right. Not everything we're going to release is going to be like this political.
Superly politically charged.
Yeah. No, not at all.
But right. That would be cliche.
But we also talk about those issues.
Yeah.
Right. That's all that means.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Mountain then.
Sure.
First of all, the title itself, Mountain, is there any significance about that? Because I know we have mountains in Canada, but I don't know, like, if are those on Crown Lands or is that, like, why that particular image? You know what I mean? Like, what does that evoke for you?
Well, just it evokes, like, the image of, like, you know, it's not, like, a literal thing necessarily,
right,
but it's, like, just rising together.
Right.
And, you know, mountains are such a symbol of strength and and unity, I guess, for communities
hope,
around mountains and stuff. Yeah, exactly. So it's more of like a symbol of hope for what the message entails.
Right, right.
I always thought, because Cody's the one that wrote that chorus, Mountain Will Shine Again. Mm. I always saw that as mountain being like, you know, a group of people that will, you know, shine again and just like to
right.
band together and create something bright and create like a brighter future.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like that mountain refers to like the indigenous people of Canada.
Right.
I could be wrong on that again. Like that's Cody's lyric that I'm interpreting for you.
But it's great because like I keep it open
for
that reason.
Yeah,
right.
What I feel there.
Well, it's just because like to me, I guess knowing the background of like kind of what the band name was about, I was like, oh cool, like this is the song that like really kind of unapologetically like
mm-hmm.
I was like, Mountain, it's kind of, it feels like it's this like collective entity representing a people group that's been so deeply harmed
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
it's a strong image.
Yes,
right, so
totally.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I think a really interesting, and I could be wrong on this front because I'm not very familiar with indigenous music, but the guitar line that the song starts with, I'm like, on the one hand, I'm like, it sounds bluesy, but then I don't know if there's anything else to it. Like, was that a primarily blues-based thing, or like, what's?
Yeah, I find there is like a little bit of like that kind of like, not a Gregorian chant, but there's like kind of that melody that you could almost, you could hear in, you know, potentially like some traditional native music, right? That a smooth kind of. Pentatonic line, but
right.
and then that goes so far deep, right? Whereas you talk about blues, and you know, blues is the music of slaves, essentially, right? By combining like traditional African hymns with a lot of those like Christian lyrics
right.
of you know
mm-hmm.
of like colonization and
right.
blending that in, and that's how the blues came to
right.
be.
That's how we got
and
all of this, really.
Yeah, it's all, yeah, all modern music is still built around that,
yeah.
and that's kind of yeah. So I guess that's where that line comes from.
Right.
And, yeah.
It's cool.
It wasn't like a you know, obviously I didn't sit down and be like, I'm going to try and write something
thing,
that sounds like, you know, like a native traditional, like powwow song or anything.
No.
But,
right.
Yeah.
That song though, definitely it has a lot of impact. Like the first time I listened to it, I was like, I read through the lyrics actually like as I was downloading the album
cool.
off of Bandcamp or whatever,
yeah,
and I was
yeah.
like, oh, I definitely need to hear this one.
Thanks.
Yeah.
That's, right
yeah.
on. That's something that's kind of lost in the digital generation.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Thank you for reading them even before you listen to the music. That's
no,
really cool, man.
For sure. It's I always find that to be a meaningful part of like what an artist does. Like,
yeah.
I, especially like being a songwriter myself, I know how much like sweat goes into lyric writing sometimes.
Yeah, it's
so
intense.
I'm just like, it's such an integral part of what
musicians do, mm-hmm. and it definitely gets overlooked these days. So totally. I try to make that a priority.
Yeah, right on.
But man, what was it about Mountain? Let's get into some of those verses, because there's mention. I think the bluesiness of it, just the sound of it being evocative of like so much of North American history, and also mention of the devil. I thought that was very interesting because there are tropes of like blues music and the devil and the crossroads, but obviously in this context, it's a very different type of thing. What's the line? I saw through the devil, he promised to take our land. I ran through the levee, seeds of the dream in hand. And I don't know, let's just talk about that. Like,
yeah, so I mean, when I wrote that line, I was like trying to really think of like, you know, from the perspective of an indigenous person in the time historically.
Right.
And they always, you know, they would always historically speak of, you know, the Europeans who came over as the devil.
Right.
For what they'd done. It's pretty brutal.
Without small cause, you know? Like some brutal
and so
stuff.
I was really in that kind of headspace when I wrote that kind of thing, and I really wanted to convey, like, I guess the weight of how they must have felt, and like the fear for them to actually use those descriptors, you know.
Right.
And so I just I threw that in there, and
definitely,
you know, kind of stuck because it was really like emotional, I guess.
Oh, hugely so. Yeah. It definitely. What am I thinking? There's that old metal song. Run to the Hills. I don't know how you feel about that one, but
I love Maiden so much.
Yeah, like, Maiden's great. Best. Maiden's great.
Yeah, it definitely. I think for them to write a song like that is one thing, and I think for you, who actually has like family and cultural ties to what happened here, it's got to be a lot more of a intense.
Yeah, it's different. It's different.
It's definitely different.
It's a different experience for sure.
Like how close does that hit home for you? Like, is it okay to ask that? Or
that was fine.
Like how connected do you feel to that experience in terms of like what happened to indigenous people in this country?
I feel like pretty deeply about it for sure. Yeah. I experienced, you know, like intergenerational suffering.
Okay.
Which, you know, so like I definitely feel like I empathize with, you know, what happened to my ancestors on like an emotional level. Mm. And it's almost subconscious, you know, when you're talking about it and you really get into it and you really feel like the weight and the pressure and like you can't even imagine the pain that they went through.
Right. So. Yeah. Wasn't it like the last residential school closed in like 96 or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And the whole time we were all complicit.
Right.
You know, it's just something you have to recognize. You know, it's not just some distant thing, you know, where it's easy to read these lyrics and be like, oh, they're just talking about something that happened in, you know, the 18th century. Past, yeah. But
it compares and contrasts those things. Yeah. That's what the song does.
You know, if you're under, you know, if you're any older than 18, then you were alive when, when people's culture was being systemically eliminated.
Just destroyed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's an important thing to recognize.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What does, The line in the chorus about the mountain will shine again. What to you, Cody? What does that look like? What does shining again? Like, obviously, that's kind of, you can't predict the future what would that mean? What would that look like?
Like,
what's the dream that you run through the levee with?
I guess for Indigenous youth to feel empowered and informed about their culture, and for everybody, you know, I guess the dream is reconciliation in Canada and I mean Australia too, obviously. There's Crown Land there too,
right?
And there's a horrible history there too, but you know, that's the mountain will shine again. That's what that means.
I think it all starts with education,
right?
And that's where all compassion usually starts, because I'm not sure what your education was like, but for me, like, I went to like really good public schools, and you know, for the most part, Canadian history largely glossed over the genocides that happened, and it talks about, you know, Christopher Columbus showed up, you know, and then the French came, and then the English came, and then Canada was a country, and you know,
somewhere in there was great, some the great Métis evil, or something,
like the great evil doings are kind of like glossed over, and then also when you're reading about Canadian history, like, how many people are taught about Indigenous history. And I think it was only this year.
Yeah, this year.
That we're, you know, very lucky to...
It's mandatory,
you know,
now.
Yeah, now.
In Ontario.
Is that is that a thing now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, wow.
So for the longest time, like, people weren't learning about their own culture. They weren't learning about Indigenous culture. So, you know, it all starts there. And I think that's all contributing to shining again, whatever that may be.
Yeah, because I had to seek my education elsewhere, you know. Like, I grew up and I had a cottage up around Alderville First Nation.
Okay.
And I'm really good friends with, like, you know,
where's
the
that?
Elders there. That's right around Roseneath, Coburg-ish area.
Okay, cool.
And yeah, they taught me a lot.
Wow.
About history and stuff like
That's
that.
That's cool. Like, they're able to kind of keep the traditions alive, like, keep record of things, or, like...
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. There's a brilliant, like, oral history throughout all those communities and stuff like that. But they've taught me a lot in terms of education of, you know, history, Indigenous history in Canada, and, like, you know, local history, too, especially. So many cool stories and so many enlightening stories about, like, you know... what happened, I guess.
It seems like there's, like, an entire, like real cultural wealth of, like, this part of the world that so many of us are just missing out on knowing about entirely.
Yes.
Because it was, I mean, very intentionally sought to be erased, right?
Yeah.
So...
It was very successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of one of the questions I have, because, like, same as you, Kevin, like, public school education around, I don't know where you were, I was in Toronto.
Yeah.
And for however maybe progressively minded my teachers might have been, that the curriculum really does gloss over, like, who was here for all those thousands of years of human history before Europeans showed up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's, you know... especially of late, I've really found myself being like, wow, yeah, I really don't know what the heck this place is to the majority of people who've been here.
It's like that feeling when you're a kid and you didn't think that, like, your parents existed before you were born.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very much like that's
similar.
What most of Canada feels.
Right.
Yeah.
So
right.
You gotta correct that.
Yeah. Yeah. As a Canadian act, what do you think... How do you relate, like, as Canadians and also, like, knowing what happened here? You know what I mean? Like, how do you... So, okay, let me... This
sure.
This is a perfect way for me to ask the question.
Sure.
I'm a Canadian-born Japanese-American.
Yeah.
Which is... And, like, I would make all kinds of... I would deal with some of the issues that come with that by joking about it as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the World Wars left some really contradictory identities in that identity,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Because it's like my parents' countries blew each other up.
Yeah.
So one worse than the other, but the point being, like...
And that, well, in the history of recognizing the Japanese internment camps all over Canada.
Yeah.
And the U.S., and it's a huge thing. But I know for me, it's always been an interesting question to kind of say, like, How do I make those pieces fit together in a way that's not just, like, a contradictory mess? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and I know, especially for, like, an Indigenous Canadian person who's, like, I mean, you're participating in the culture of what people would consider, I guess, not necessarily mainstream, but, like, in the Canadian world.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do you experience cognitive dissonance? Because I know... I choked on that word.
No worries.
I know I've experienced, like, a good bit of cognitive dissonance about, like, my identity.
Yeah.
And so I wonder what that's like for someone who's experienced that, like, is in like, the history of your people is kind of even more brutal than, like, just internment. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I do a lot, like, cognitive dissonance and what I identify with and what I'm living, you know? I feel like... You know, you get in headspaces, and there's ups and downs, but, you know, you get into headspaces where you're like, man, like, how am I here? Like,
right.
You know, like, why?
Right.
You know, why me? How did I get in here?
Mm.
And I don't know. You just, it's just hard to balance that. So I don't know. I've largely pushed it away, you know, my whole life.
Right, right, right.
And just tried not to think too much about it.
Right.
And yeah, exactly. Blend in, which is kind of rough, but
right.
Yeah, then you realize you want to stand out when you get to a certain point.
Right.
But yeah, but now I'm coming to where I want to, you know, openly be like, yes, I am this, and this is who I am, and I'm proud of it, you know? And, yeah, I feel a lot of dissonance, especially among some peers, you know, old friends, I guess, who aren't as educated about those things, and they start talking about, like, you know, history and stuff, and I feel, like, super, like, disassociative. I'm like, whoa, this is really weird. So, yeah, it's just more with what other people say and how I react to it, other than, like, you know, what I'm thinking about and how I fit into all of it.
It's good. That's a good answer.
Okay.
I know. It might feel like it, I feel like it's one of those things. It's hard to necessarily like really put your finger on like one specific thing that answers that question because it's really multifaceted.
Yeah, it is a very multifaceted question, but it's really good.
It's a complicated thing to deal with, and like I've only dealt with it on a small scale, but like it's there. And I don't want to just make this about Cody too, but I know Kevin, for you probably.
Oh yes.
As a Jewish. Canadian.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's as much in Canadian history specifically.
Well, other than the fact that Canada, you know, turned its, closed its doors during the Holocaust.
Right.
And
was
like,
yeah,
we don't want any of you in here.
Right.
You know, and Canada historically is a very anti-Semitic country. But then again, you could say that pretty much every country.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
That's like a whole other thing to get into.
Right.
I traveled to Israel a few years ago, and it's really interesting where you compare Israeli-Palestinian conflict to what's actually going on in Canada with the indigenous issues there, and it's a very darkened mirror of each other, almost, right? And
can you
I experienced a lot of cognitive dissonance on that, you know, recognizing that, you know, both. Both Israelis and both Palestinians faced a lot of oppression.
Right.
And at the hands of each other.
Right.
You know, that's like, a, you know, it's, again, I'm a musician, not a politician, so.
Sure.
It really is like a reflection of what's going on in this country as well. That conflict of, you know, who was here first and, you know, who deserves to just live a life of peace
here.
And unfortunately there's not a lot of that going on over there or over here, and I don't know, it's growing up you always want to make yourself as white as possible living in Canada. You know, because, you know, Cody and I are not traditional, like, you know, like I grew up in a very WASPy neighborhood, and, I'm not that,
right?
And, you know, to be the only, you know, Jew in a school, well, me and my sister, so there you
Okay,
go.
Fair enough.
But to be in that kind of position, it's very unique, and I totally understand, like, what, you know, Cody's experience as a native kid growing up in, you know, a whitewashed neighborhood. And, and then, you know, growing up now, it's, we do know privilege because we are, you know, two, like, fairly straight, white-passing males.
Right.
And, we haven't seen, you know, much in the way of racism, you know, although, you know, as kids, I know.
I have seen a lot
like
of
racism. I saw a lot of bullying for being that. And
right.
You kind of, you just, like as Cody said, right, you put on that mask, you blend in, and you're like, yeah, no, I'm not different than you. No, we're all the same. It's all good. You know?
I think that's an interesting thing, especially the idea of, like, white passingness.
Yeah.
Because it's an interesting thing, I guess, for the three of us to talk about, because that's always been me.
Yeah.
Like, people will be like, oh, yeah, that's a white guy, and you fit in as a white guy until someone realizes you're not, and they feel like that's something that they can pick on, or they can make fun of, or they can take advantage of.
Exactly.
And it's a strange...
It's a weird feeling.
It's a strange thing, because you can, like, you can almost walk with the illusion of, like, or even the actuality, like, the reality of privilege and, like, feeling that the safety that comes with that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in a moment, it can be like...
Just gone.
It's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a very strange phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously not anywhere near, like where like darker skinned people of color have to deal with it on a much more intense basis. But it's still it's weird. I think that's the word I would use for it. It's a strange phenomenon.
Yeah. Totally.
So even to know it in a passing sense, I think that's important to recognize. Like those experiences that we all share momentarily. A lot of her friends deal with all the time.
Right. Yeah. Just like a constant thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, good. Like you have to like transcend that with your music and bring people together, and that's what a live show is about. Because we have an audience that transcends race and generations.
Yeah. So and when it's a nice safe place for everybody to just rock
music,
out.
Yeah. It's just music and it's pure, and I think that's really special. Because at the end of the night, when we go, go hang out by the merch table, and we get embraced by everybody, and we embrace everybody, and I think that's so important.
That's
and,
cool.
That's what it's all about.
Speaking of embrace intergenerationally, how you guys definitely, you have your own sound and it's definitely modern. Like Kevin, what you're doing, what you were showing me earlier on the pedals, like you're basically Skrillex. But how are you guys feeling the love from like the older generation of rock music fans?
Very, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah. We have a wide, wide demographic.
That's cool.
So really younger people and older people.
Yeah,
like both sides.
I think
scale.
We appeal to like classic rock fans and modern rock fans, but I don't know. Like rock is like I don't listen to a lot of rock music. I find I really enjoy like electronic music and ambient music and hip hop and jazz and fusion. Where Cody has a very wide range of music as well. But at the end of the day, I think our formative years were all built around rock music for Cody and I. You know, I was really into like the first and second wave of like punk rock music. You know,
right.
The Clash was one of my favorite bands. And hearing Green Day on the radio as a kid, like, it was a transcendent experience.
And it was just like Rush, Rush, Rush. Zeppelin, Zeppelin, Zeppelin.
Yeah. Right. And, then I discovered, classic rock, and all bets were off, and getting into progressive rock, and the further you get into music, you find that like good music is good music, and quality is more important than anything else, and playing with conviction. So that's what we try and get across in our music, and I guess we draw from a fairly like, wide spring of sources of inspiration, but at the end of the day, it is like hard-hitting progressive rock, rock is probably always going to be like our favorite thing to play. Even if it might not be like my favorite thing to listen to anymore, it's still when I pick up an instrument, that's what comes out naturally. And why fight that?
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think it's interesting because I've observed this phenomenon with a lot of musicians is that the music they play, and it's not always the case, but oftentimes what they play stops being what they listen to.
Yeah.
Some extent.
I listen to a lot of that kind of music.
But when all you listen to is rock and that's all that comes out, right? Because like when you're playing music, all is like it's what you've been listening to is kind of going to come out, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's how you get like more interesting music. Whereas Cody says he listens to rock, but he listens to like really fucking far out there rock.
Right.
And so that comes across in his playing, right?
Right.
It's not like he's going listening to the radio and then
I don't listen to active rock. I listen to out there rock.
Even though we are active rock, and nothing against a lot of our friends. That
Because
like good music, again, good music is good
music.
It's good music.
But you have to like draw from like a wide
inspiration.
Inspiration, and then bring it back home. You know.
Yeah, true. Because I love like reggae. Some Afrobeat stuff.
Yeah, we've done some jams in more or less along those lines at the good old, the late Tuesday open mic night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I kept that going for like almost 3 years, man.
You were serious with that, and those were good times.
Yeah, it was good times for sure.
So what happened? What brought that down? Can you talk about that, or is that not so much like?
Oh no, it's whatever. You know, I just woke up the day after one, and the owner's like, "Yeah, it's not happening anymore." I was like, "Okay, cool."
And that was that.
It was, you know, that's it was, it. Okay. It was, you know, yeah, that's how it is, and you move on.
Yeah, and, that's fair.
That's how it goes.
It was a cool thing while it lasted, though.
Yeah, it was definitely nice. But I was finding myself, we were talking about it earlier, the things you sacrifice from music, it pretty much amounts to everything.
Right.
yep. There's only so many places you can put yourself until you spread yourself too thin. And right. I've been doing that notoriously for the last 3 years. I've been working very, very late nights and very early mornings.
Right.
And for a long time. And
I've noticed that about you, I would see like the number of things you were at or doing or like running sound for or like hosting, and I was just, and like also your band, and I was just like, how are you alive, man? Like
very lucky to be alive.
Like, very lucky, like with the love and support of, you know, my close circle and caffeine is where it's at.
Right.
Yeah, like I drink a lot of coffee.
Right.
Like shout out to Brew Wizards.
Yeah.
They have a supply, like a locally roasted coffee called Never Sleep Again, and it's like a double caffeinated bean.
Wow.
And it's where it's at for sure. I honestly credit that specific strain of coffee for keeping me going for the last couple of years.
Legit.
Yeah.
That's proper. I mean, that's life, right? Like sometimes that's what you need to keep going.
Yeah, like Cody and I try and lead clean lifestyles, and you know, I'm taking care of myself a lot more these days. I'm trying to get more sleep. I'm trying to really recognize that if this is going to be what I'm doing with the rest of my life, which it is, I need to be smarter about it, and you know, not take pride in like, oh man, yeah, like I worked until 3 a.m, got up at 8 a.m. for the next gig, worked all day, then rehearsed all day and night, and then went on and did this, and it's time to only do the things that actually matter and only do the things that are really actually going to push the band forward, because at the end of the day, the band is number one. Yeah, Groundlands comes before like everything else.
Right.
How do I actually keep that going? And the answer is to keep myself going and not start resenting everything.
So, bingo.
It's been like a lesson 3 years in the making.
I feel like that's a life lesson that a lot of people need to learn about a lot of areas of life.
Yeah.
Totally.
And drink lots of water too.
Right.
Can't get enough.
I'm still working on that one.
Yeah, me too. Same. Yeah. I struggle with that one. But definitely, trimming the fat, getting, like, focusing in on, like, what's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It takes some people a lifetime to learn that. Yeah. So.
Very true.
Yeah.
Still working on it.
I feel you. Everyone's on that journey.
Yeah.
It's the open road.
The open road. The end's journey. Cool.
Thank you guys for doing this.
Thanks,
it's been a good long chat. And you guys are the first episode, right? So thank you for being part of that.
What an honor. Thanks, Max.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really glad it could be you guys, because I feel your story is just beginning to be told, and it's people are going to be wanting to know pretty soon, you know, like they're going to be asking that question, like, who's Crownlands?
How did these guys get to be so bad? They were only cool when they were underground.
Oh
man,
I can't wait! I can't wait until the sellout accusations come.
Oh yeah,
I'm excited.
I'm ready.
Like honestly, dude, we sold out when we made Crownlands. So okay, so just make this for the record.
All right,
Crownlands was made as a sellout because otherwise, the only thing Cody and I would be doing would be
progressive rock.
Like all of our songs would be 30-minute instrumental songs about space and whales. So,
yes.
Or Space Whales.
Space Whales.
Or Space Whales.
Yeah. Or Star Wars Rebels.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So we already sold out when we wrote our first song. So there.
Nice.
It's out.
All right. This is it. Officially, Crownlands are the perpetual eternal sellouts.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thanks.
And
thanks,
we'll do it again sometime and dissect every song or something like that.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. Cool.
See you, buddy. See you.